This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue along. It is Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio. Good, the bad, and the dumb coming up later on this hour. We have got Matt Mershell joining us, Orlando Sentinel College Football. Smartest guy, one of the smart guys I know about college football. And there's a lot to dissect. Yes, Oregon went on the road and beat Ohio State. Yeah, that's a big deal. And Ohio State may be in a position where they may need a little help to try to get in the college football playoff, or maybe they won't. You know, the same thing could be said about Clemson. Clemson could roll the table in the ACC, but because of that early loss to Georgia, it might keep them out. But what are the odds we have four unbeaten teams at the end of the year? And if you're Ohio State and you go on and win the Big Ten and you win the Big Ten championship, well, how much would a loss to Oregon in September really hurt you with the committee? Same thing with Clemson. If Clemson rolls on and wins the ACC, wins games by double digits, would a loss to Georgia in the opening game of the season really derail you if we're not talking about four teams, unbeaten teams, in the college football landscape? And I will be honest with you, I don't think there will be. I do not see a scenario where we'll be looking at the one-loss teams at the end of the season and going, oh, well, too bad because you ran into a buzzsaw of these unbeatens. I just don't think we'll have it. Now, what it does do is these losses early in the season to Georgia by Clemson and Oregon by Ohio State, it puts more pressure on you to win your games outward. Meaning you better not get that second loss somewhere down the road, because whereas Ohio State a few years ago lost to Virginia Tech and still won the national championship, you can lose a game and be okay, but two, you're really pushing it because you add more teams into the conversation. Now, instead of being amongst the unbeatens and the one losses, you're now amongst the unbeaten, the one losses, and all the two losses. And that puts you in a little bit of trouble. And I think that's where the eye-opening reason why people are worried about Ohio State losing this game really come from. I honestly don't think that one loss keeps them out, but two losses could, and now there's zero room for error on the way. So Matt Mershell is going to join us. But coming up, the good, the bad, and the dumb, and a whole week to really process all three categories. As we continue, it's Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, the good, the bad, and the dumb, and we are glad because Ron is back after a week off to give us the good, the bad, and the dumb. We don't attempt these when you're not here. Don't be silly.
No.
Why would we?
I've seen people try, and I've seen people fail, so I just,
it's worse.
We just leave it alone.
We'd hurt ourselves. Sean and I would just get hurt if we tried to do this. What's the good of the day?
The good of the day was the greatest catch ever made on a Saturday during college football. Did you catch it?
Did I catch the, is this the Jacksonville State game?
No, this is the cat dangling from the Hard Rock Stadium
during the
Miami Hurricanes game.
I thought it was the last second touchdown by Jacksonville State.
Nah, that was fun too.
That was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the cat came up, fell down. Yeah.
Cat fell. I mean, just happened to be 9/11 and fell into an American flag. How patriotic was that?
Yeah.
I have lots of questions about this.
I don't like cats, so I would have laughed hysterically as it plummeted to the death.
Wow.
Is that rude?
That's a little harsh.
Okay, that's rude.
That's a little harsh.
All right, never mind.
But cats always land on their feet. So, I mean, the worst thing that would probably happen is just broken legs.
Yeah, no. I would have tried to save the cat because that had to have been petrifying for the cat.
Yeah, but what I want to know is, and there's no video of it, how did it get there?
That's a good question. That's a really good question.
Right? I mean, all of a sudden, just video.
Did somebody
bring
it in, or is it just a stray cat?
Well, I'm figuring it's a stray cat.
Nobody brought in a cat.
No, all stadiums have cats.
Yeah, that is true.
You know,
they're a bunch of strays.
And I bet you a lot of the stadiums keep cats there. It's like
cats are amazing. Like if one ever gets lost, and we always kind of go, "Oh, the poor kitty." No, they'll survive.
They're fine.
They're fine. They know how to do it. They know there's a little instinct that kicks in where they go, I know where to get my food. I get it.
I don't believe they're 100% domesticated like dogs.
No. The other thing about cats is, let's say it was a puppy, right? And a puppy fell and you caught the puppy. The puppy would go, oh, I love you. They'd lick your face. They'd be all over you. The cat looked up and went,
watch
all right,
the video.
Bye.
Watch the video. This cat immediately was like, get me out of here.
I'm
just
not playing
clawing.
Around.
Clawing the guy who caught
Thanks
him.
Thanks for saving me, but I'm not hanging around.
No.
Are you out of your mind? I'm in my independence.
Yeah, but see, I know stadiums house cats. I know for a fact Disneyland, I'm certain Disney World has a feral cat population.
Yeah, I'm sure they do.
Because you know why? Keep mice away.
Which
seems kind of awkward.
A little weird, yeah.
Disneyland, you know, Mickey Mouse, I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that was the greatest catch of the day. Sorry.
That's awesome.
I know Jacksonville State, you know, winning a touchdown, taking down Florida, whatever.
Jacksonville State. It's amazing. All right, what's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day, this is a gripe that we might have to explore a little more. We don't have an answer for it. But it's these TV right deals where affiliate stations have to change the game.
Oh, yeah, okay.
All right, so there's two incidences that happened. One was with college football. I'm sitting there, I'm enjoying Ohio State, Oregon. Who isn't? It was a fantastic game to watch.
It really was.
About 3 minutes to go in the game, one score game. Flip. I'm forced to watch Texas A&M and Colorado.
Oh, really? Oh, that's awful.
And nothing I can do about it except go to the app to finish watching the game.
Oh, stinger.
The other one was yesterday in the NFL. I'm watching Bengals-Vikings. It's an overtime.
It's an overtime.
Right?
And what, Minnesota kicked like a 50-yard field goal to get it into overtime?
The game is actually in overtime. Cincinnati had already had the ball. Vikings had just punted the ball back, a beautiful punt to the Bengals. The Bengals had to drive. You know, they had, I don't know, I guess they ended up punting. Why? Because locally here in Houston, switch, I had to watch the beginning to Saints-Packers. It's like, can't we just finish these games and then come in, like, tune into this game already in progress?
Yeah, I don't understand. That's a good question. Like, there's got to be a better way to do this with split screen technology stuff to just go, look, let's give the people
if it's a blowout game, sure, go ahead and switch it. I don't care. But
you're right. Like, if I'm watching Buffalo beat up on, I don't know, whoever. And it's, you know, I'm like, oops, I got this game, and it's 25-0 or whatever, 35-3. And you want to take me to another game? That's cool. But why can't we split screen? So, like, look, you gave me this game in my market. You basically were saying, don't, please be invested in this.
Yes.
For our own.
You have no choice.
Business, right? So we're giving you this game. Please watch this because it helps us out. And then we go, okay, it's not really a game I'm interested in, but I will. And then you go, just kidding. Goodbye. Here's another game for you. Boom. No, you're right. It's got to be a way that we can use technology to go, hey, we gave you this game. Let's finish it and let's go to the next one.
It's not like it's computer automated either. There's guys sitting in a booth making these decisions that they can go and say, you know what? Hey, Oregon, Ohio State is going to be the most talked about game this weekend.
Yeah, exactly.
You have two powerhouse teams, and one is upsetting the other right now. And there's 3 minutes to go. Ohio State had the ball at that point, too. And then they flip it over, and it's Texas A&M, Colorado.
Just starting in Denver.
Just starting. I mean, Bengals-Vikings. Bengals had the ball, and they're driving down the field. They literally switched to the Saints just to see, and the Saints run onto the field. I don't care.
Yeah.
Why would I care about them running onto the field? Of course,
no, right.
I know they're going to run onto the field eventually, right? They got to. They have to take the field.
No,
I don't need to
see
that.
Yeah, that's bad.
So
that's not good.
That really bothered me.
All right, what's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day is all the heat. Speaking of Saints, Drew Brees is receiving for getting some hair.
Getting some hair.
Yes. Drew Brees, if we all can remember, you know, was very, very thin up top, and now that he's a TV analyst, has grown a full head of lettuce, and everyone is giving him a hard time about it.
because they think it's the television saying just, you needed hair.
I mean, I saw one tweet from Bomani Jones. I will call him out, saying, "I wonder if he went to the same hair guy as Jason Witten." Who cares?
Ooh. Oh yeah, so what?
Let him have some hair. You know, he's a rich man who's doing nothing now. He can go get hair plugs
if
he wants or
Jordan
whatever.
Spieth
I don't care.
Did the same thing. Jordan, yes. Remember Jordan Spieth when he won the Masters at 21, he was balding.
Yeah.
And then he all of a sudden he had a hair because he's like, well, I can fix this.
You see it all the time with athletes or celebrities that go ahead and, like, I have the means. Why not go do it?
Yeah. I've mentioned this before. The one thing, hair doesn't bother me. What bothers me is when I see a celebrity and they lose tremendous amounts of weight where they're almost unrecognizable.
Yeah.
Now, I want people to be healthy. Don't
John
get me
Goodman.
Wrong. I want yeah, exactly. I want people to be healthy. I don't need my fat actors and entertainers to stay fat forever. Of course, I want them to lose weight. But there's something
missing about John Goodman now.
Yeah, right?
I'm sorry, John. I don't mean to point you out, but.
No, there is. Like Jonah Hill is a perfect example,
another
right?
One,
Jonah
yeah.
Hill had a character. He was kind of he had this certain persona that he was. And then all of a sudden, I don't need a picture of him buff. Like all of a sudden, I'm like, he's totally different now. It's like watching Joe Piscopo on Saturday Night Live. And then he's on Muscle Magazine covers.
Right.
Like, of course, it's great that you're healthy and whatnot. But it means my image of you changes. Like, you know, I'm glad Adele can get into a size 2 now. But I also know it comes because of wealth. It doesn't come from something I can do.
Right.
Right. She's had surgery. She's hired like the greatest nutritional team.
Oh, chefs, full-time, trainers.
That do nothing. Like, imagine if how much weight you would lose, Ron, if somebody was around you all the time going, only eat what I prepare for you.
Yeah.
Don't put anything in your mouth except what I'm going to give you. And in 30 days, you're going to lose 27 pounds.
Dumb it down. I mean, you can order food and have food delivered to you and say, this is what you got to eat. Right. But you also have to have a healthy amount of exercise, which means, probably need to go to a gym. You might have to get a personal trainer to keep you motivated to keep going. I mean, all that is just, extra income that you and I, we just don't have.
Right. Exactly. So when there is a annoyance of seeing somebody go, and again, I get it. If you're rich and you can afford the hair treatment, that's great. But something about, I don't know why I can't,
no,
when it comes
I
to weight
you.
Loss, I go, yeah, because you have a chef and people around you who are doing everything they possibly can to make sure you do fit in that size 4 or 2 or whatever it is that you're doing.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
or,
that's why
or Drew Carey looking like he's, 160 pounds on Price is Right.
I know. We kind of like our fat actors.
Yeah. But like when I see Al Roker, I'm like happy for him. I'm like, I know you got the surgery and you would have probably been dead by 60 with the way. But I'm
maybe
glad
that's
you're
maybe that was John Goodman's thing too. I don't know.
Right. Exactly.
John Goodman just still, when I've seen him in things now, just doesn't sit right with me.
Right. I agree.
Like I just stay, I guess stay the voice of Monsters Inc. So we're not seeing the body.
Right. All right. That's the good, the bad, and the dumb. Welcome back, old friend. As we continue, it's Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
Glad you could join us. Hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with 2 N's. Is your thoughts on week 1 of the NFL? We will get to week 2 of the college football season. Matt Michelle is going to join us in just a couple minutes. We'll get his take on the, the games that sort of really had an impact in week 2. I know we got a long way to go, but that Oregon victory, a lot of other games that were going on. Georgia, even though they easily beat, won their game against UAB. JT Daniels got hurt. And then how does that affect them going into their SEC schedule? You got Florida taking on Alabama coming up this weekend. Hey, when you need auto parts, O'ReillyAuto.com, just a few clicks away. They offer convenient options for you to get your parts quickly. Order online at O'ReillyAuto.com. Pick up for free at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store. They'll even bring it out to your curbside, or you can choose to have your parts delivered right to your door with free shipping on most orders over $35. Get your auto parts quickly with O'Reilly Auto Parts. Visit O'ReillyAuto.com today. Get O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. I said last night, I thought the game was boring. I know the Rams easily won and the Bears didn't look all that great. But boy, SoFi Stadium with people in it, that's a nice crib. That is a really nice place.
It's a good-looking place.
That's a good-looking place billions can buy. But that is a really nice stadium. Really nice. I was very impressed. So they were doing, you know, and look, I know we saw it last year, and but with fans in it, it's so much different. It gives you really a real feel for that place. And that gets me worried because I feel like we go around this with NFL, well, really everybody, is there's a new building and then it's nice and it's the state-of-the-art building and it's cool. And then you go, I know we just built one 15, 20 years ago, but boy, it would be really nice if we had one of those. And next thing you know, there's those sort of lists. Yeah, how can we get one of those again? And then you just sort of fleece the city for more money if you can, if you're in a position to. Some cities can't because they made an agreement with the team on certain things. But if you can, all of a sudden, next thing you know, you're getting built again. You know, remember when Camden Yards was the ballpark? Right? We were in the 80s. Yep. We were playing in these ashtray arena stadiums, these dual-purpose stadiums around the country. Think Busch Stadium, Riverfront, Three Rivers. I'm trying to think of a couple of others that were just these, you know, football/baseball multi-purpose stadiums. And then in the 90s, Camden Yards got built, and everyone went, oh, this is a modern ballpark. Like, this is the way it should be. And next thing you know, everybody wanted one, right? And all of a sudden, teams didn't want to play in the same stadium as a football team because the dynamics weren't different. The stadium was different. And so instead of like, well, this is cool, we have one place for both, they went, no, let's build a ballpark. And next thing you know, everybody was building a ballpark. And then football teams were like, well, we're not going to be stuck with this stupid ashtray, artificial turf pile of garbage. Now we want a new stadium. And then they got new stadiums too.
And then it became, hey, if you don't have a new stadium, you don't get good things anymore.
Right, yeah.
San Diego,
right.
Get the Super Bowl stripped away from them.
Yeah, like think about Pittsburgh in the 90s, right? Playing in Three Rivers Stadium, right? That artificial turf field, home to, you know, where it was frozen down the sidelines of the 70s in their playoff game against the Raiders. And think about how good the Pirates were in the early 90s when they had Barry Bonds and Bobby Bonilla and Andy Van Slyke, and they were going to the playoffs and they lost to Atlanta and all that. And they were playing in that same building, that artificial turfed place. And then look at where they are now. Think about where they are right now. They got Heinz Field, a beautiful football stadium. And then PNC Park is probably one of the most gorgeous baseball settings in all of MLB with the way that stadium looks out on the bridge and the city and what. Beautiful. It's absolutely gorgeous. And last night, SoFi Stadium, I was thinking, that's a really nice stadium. And I got to be honest, if I'm an owner, I'm a little jealous. And I know Kroenke built it with his own money and whatnot. I get it. But I'd be a little jealous to have a place like that. Now, look, I'm not saying the Bills should be holding Buffalo hostage, but you can almost see where they're like, come on, can we get one of those? Look at what's going on with these other arenas. MetLife Stadium looks nice. You know, Raymond James Stadium is a nice place. Can't play in these old. I remember going to Patriots games sitting on artificial benches. I mean, come on. Remember, like, sometimes you barely had football stadiums at all. You know, like there are iconic ones like Lambeau Field, but after a while you're like, yeah, we got to get a new place. We're not in one of those kind of places. But SoFi Stadium looked really, really nice. And it's bright. Did you notice how bright everything looked in that game?
It's that acrylic roof or yeah, whatever.
It really came through in the broadcast. It was light. It was very well lit. Like the colors of the Rams really bounced
really
off.
Really popped.
Really popped last night. You know, we all have high definition TVs, but I felt like I was like, that's a good look. That Rams colors, those Rams colors coming off the lighting, that's a very nice look. So I don't know. Just thought I'd praise the stadium last night because there was nothing else to praise about outside of Matt Stafford and the Rams cruising to victory.
No, but it did seem like last night Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth really, really, really wanted Aaron Donald to get a sack.
Yeah, I know.
Like, towards the end, they're like, he's not even in the stat category. And I'm like, the guy's doing everything he possibly can. Finally gets a sack. There it is. Now he's in the stats. And like, how many times has, you know, he just disrupted the Bears just because of being on the field?
Last week, Sean and I were not making fun, but pointing out that Jack Collinsworth sounds exactly like his father. almost syllable to syllable.
But does Jack have the slide?
Yeah. Well, he'll develop it.
He'll develop. I mean, it's not hard, right?
Yeah.
Is that another nepotism thing happening here?
Of course it is. Of course it is. This whole industry's full of it.
Yep. Chris isn't going to be around forever. Let's start grooming Jack now.
We were saying last week, you could be like, hey, Dad, I was wondering, is there any chance I'm trying to be a young sportscaster if you could help me get a job where you work at NBC Sports? And his father said, absolutely, son. I'd be more than happy to talk to every single person in NBC. Make sure you get a job working alongside your pop on Sunday Night Football. How about that?
I mean, there's going to come to a time where Al Michaels isn't going to travel to a game.
No, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's getting up there.
Yeah, that's
true. I mean, confusing on, you know, already being confused about who Matt Stafford's wife is.
They had that problem last night. Yeah. I was like, man.
So, I mean, the writing's on the wall. Al Michaels might be in his final season.
Hey, listen, Thursday night watching that Cowboys game, and he's kicking off the NFL season, and I said, God, I keep forgetting you weren't here all last week, so all of this is new to you. So Thursday night during the NFL game, Tampa Bay Dallas, they brilliantly, and I thought well placed, put a clip in the game of Madden and Michaels calling a Monday Night Football game the year after Brady had won the Super Bowl. So they were on the Monday Night Football team, and it was the next year, and they basically it was to highlight how John Madden thought that Tom Brady was the real deal. He's like, you know, everybody's wondering if this kid just won a Super Bowl is going to be the real deal. I think he's going to be the real deal. And they just sort of said, oh, you're looking pretty cool. Here we are all these years later, and he's still playing. And I thought to myself, you know, I know Al Michaels has been around, but I'm like, Al Michaels has been a network sportscaster pretty much my entire life.
I mean,
like forever, since I was a tiny child.
1980, he was a network sportscaster.
Yeah, right. But here's the thing about that. He wasn't new.
No,
he had been like he was in his 30s, his mid 30s when he called Miracle on Ice. He had been on the network in the 70s on Monday Night Baseball.
So then the only question we have is who's his dad?
Right. Who did he know?
Do we remember who his dad is?
Who did we know? Yeah.
Is there going to be a generation that don't know who Jack Buck is?
Good question. Good question. By the way, this is not to knock Jack Collinsworth. I'm sure he's a fine young broadcaster, I think, there's doors that open because, you know, your dad's the color commentator on the Sunday Night Football broadcast. It's there's some others. Mike Golic Jr., he's been a beneficiary. Doesn't mean they're bad. It just means that
it
works within the system.
Ian Eagle?
Yeah, Noah Eagle is his son. Is the voice of the Clippers, right?
Yep.
When, you know, if doors have to be opened, and no matter how you open it, I think Buck talked about this all the time. He's like, of course my dad helped me. Of course.
Yeah.
I mean, 26 years old doing
network.
That's
the only thing. Don't hide from it. Don't say that he didn't offer you anything.
Listen, that's a good point. If your father opened a door for you, or your mother, in whatever business you're in, opened a door for you, don't walk around feeling like you have to defend that. No, not hide from it. That you have to say, no, I would have gotten this anyway. Joe Buck always has said, look, I was 26 years old and I was the lead baseball guy for the World Series featuring the Yankees. All right. So this is one of the most watched World Series that you're going to find in a long time. The Yankees are in the World Series for the first time since 1981 and 26 year old Joe Buck. And he said, my father absolutely had something to do with that. Of course he did. There's no question. There's no way if I was a nobody growing up in the middle of nowhere, I would have gotten that gig. No chance. I would have gotten that gig. Of course he was helped. Same thing, you know, just say, look, yeah, of course. I may have opened the door further by working hard and showing how good I could be and whatnot, and putting the time in, but of course my father helped.
And that's okay.
It's a tribute to your father and the hard work that he put into the business.
And if, I mean, the door opens and then you run with it and turn something into it,
sure.
That's on you.
Absolutely.
That's why, you know, I think we should celebrate Joe Buck.
We should.
Because he ran away with it and made something
I am not a Joe Buck hater. I like his stuff. I think it's hard to do what he does. All right, Matt Michelle coming up next. We'll talk college football as we continue on Wake Up Call.
You're listening.
listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we're going to focus our attention now on the college football game as week two is in the books. Week two and a half, you want to count week zero. Let's go to the Progressive guest line. Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Matt Michelle joins us, Orlando Sentinel covers college football. How are you, my friend?
Pretty good. How are you doing this morning?
Good. Your takeaway from the Oregon Ducks winning that game in Columbus. Listen, I don't know if what it means for Ohio State. How much does it mean for Oregon? How much does it mean for the Pac-12?
Well, it's a huge win for the Pac-12. It's a statement win, you know, because this is a conference that has, you know, been kind of the butt of jokes for the last couple of years, you know, and then the fact that they haven't been able to get a team, you know, even in close to the college football playoff. And so for Oregon to go on the road to beat a number three team in Ohio State, you know, to be an underdog in this game and then to win and do it the way they did it, it's big for them. I think at least it gives them a statement. Now, that being said, then later on in the evening, Pac-12 goes out and watches its other best teams get knocked off. So for them, it's huge to have at least one school that is going to be a factor that finds its way in the top five now and could be in that discussion. You know, so I think it's big for them. For Oregon, it's a statement win for the program, for Mario Cristobal, what he's trying to do. And, you know, I think it just continues to build on the great job he's done there and showcases the fact that, you know, they have an unbelievable offense and they've got a really good defense that played tough against the good Ohio State team.
How hard was it in terms of the preseason look at Pac-12 football? I know college, obviously, players move on and players come in and there's a changing landscape all the time, but Pac-12 didn't play a lot of games, didn't really, you know, they were really hampered by COVID restrictions. So we never really got a real feel for what they were in 2020.
Yeah, we really didn't. I mean, some of these schools only played four games. I mean, so you never got an opportunity to really see, you know, what these programs could have gone through, you know. And so I think that's a big telling tale. Look at Washington, for instance. You know, Washington came off last year and everyone thought, okay, you know, they looked decent. You know, they couldn't play in the championship game because of COVID issues. But then you look up, you know, and this year people expect them to be, you know, a top 25 program. They're 0-2 now. You know, I mean, they've had their issues and their struggles. So I think for a lot of people, the Pac-12 really, you're just not sure what you're going to get. I think we'll see more about what this conference is going to be over the next couple of weeks. But, you know, the disappointing thing for this league has to be the fact, like I said, you know, you look at going after week two, you've only got three teams that are undefeated now. Everyone else has got at least one loss. So that's not what you want as a conference if you're trying to compete, you know, for in the playoff rankings, because, you know, that just already puts you down, you know, kind of behind the eight ball, so to speak. So I think for the Pac-12, they got to find a way to kind of, you know, year in and year out, find a way to have some of these teams, elite teams, to be there as well. So Oregon's good. UCLA seems to be good. So is Arizona State. We'll see what happens over the next couple of weeks if they continue that trend.
So what's the takeaway for Ohio State now? I know people overreact to these kind of things, but it's still a long season. There's still a conference they can win. In terms of a damage grade, what would you give this loss?
Well, I think I think because it was a top 15 team, I don't know if you could say how big it was, so to speak, but I think the thing that's pointed out to me was this is not a perfect team. They've got some deficiencies, and one of their biggest ones is on the defensive side of the football. You know, they're giving up way too many yards for an Ohio State team. We're not used to seeing that. And way too many big plays. You know, that's one of the things I think that stood out to me was, you know, this is not a team that's used to giving up, you know, explosive plays, but we saw that over the last couple of weeks. And, Minnesota took them to the wire, almost came out with something before Ohio State was able to pull away. We saw Oregon able to, you know, even when Ohio State made a run and tried to get back in that game, time and time again, Oregon would come back and find a way to march down the field and you know, score some points. So that's disturbing if you're Ohio State. You know, offensively, I think this is still a top team. C.J. Stroud seems to kind of accepted that mantle of being the starting quarterback. He's done an amazing job through for over 400 yards in this performance. To me, it's got to be the defensive side and special teams. They've got to correct those mistakes before they get into the Big Ten play, because you've got good teams at Penn State. You know, Michigan State's playing really well. Iowa's outstanding right now. So they've got to find a way to correct those.
Georgia, no problems with UAB, and then their defense really, you know, scored in the only touchdown in the game against Clemson. But JT Daniels is hurt. We don't really know where he is right now. Stetson Bennett did a fine job against a Blazers team, yay. But as they head into the SEC schedule, how important is JT Daniels? What do you make of the Georgia offense without him, and what do you make it with him?
Well, I think he's a crucial piece to it. I mean, listen, I think Stetson Bennett did a great job, you know, against UAB. I think he fit in what they wanted to do. I think Georgia as a team decided to open things up a little bit more. They were very conservative play calling against Clemson. I think they were much more open in the offensive style against UAB. I think they realized that JT Daniels is the guy. He's got to step in there and be ready to go. And I think that's one of the reasons why you didn't see him maybe go up in that game. So it's important for them to get him back. And I think this offense obviously is a much better offense when he's got him in there playing as well. So it's crucial for them because we know they've got a stellar defense. This is one of the best defenses in the country, one of the best defenses in the SEC right now. So they're going to keep games close. They just need to make sure their offense kind of matches that. If offense could put some points on the board and let their defense kind of pit its ears back, then this is going to be a really good team. They're a top five team for sure, but they've got to get their quarterback back healthy and make sure he's on the field if they want a chance to go all the way to compete for an SEC championship and possibly a playoff spot.
Matt, Ole Miss had no problems with Austin Peay. That was expected, but the Rebels look really good on offense. That's also expected. Do you think this is a team that could be one of those Western SEC, Western Division teams that's kind of a pain for some top teams in the conference?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I think the thing for me with them is their defense. You know, they were so good offensively. Matt Corral is obviously a talented quarterback, a guy who's probably going to be one of the top quarterbacks in the NFL draft. But their defense was so bad last year. It's a little bit improved this year, but if they can get better and incrementally better every game, I think they're going to be someone that's really going to kind of be a pain in someone's side all the time. Because if they can stop some teams and get some turnovers, they've got the offense to score some points. And I think that's kind of where Lane Kiffin is happy to have his team at right now. Is, you know, you kind of don't want to overlook them, but you're not really looking at them and circling them, thinking they're a top, you know, a top 10 team. So for me, I think that's where they want to be. And you look at their schedule. I mean, there are going to be some opportunities there to be kind of a pain. You know, they play Alabama on October 2nd. They have Arkansas the week after that. They got LSU 2 weeks after that, and then Auburn. So there's a stretch right there where Ole Miss can really be a disruptive force in the SEC West and put their and kind of plant their flag there.
All right, we got to start paying attention to Iowa now. Good win in Ames against Iowa State. Brock Purdy looked pedestrian against his Hawkeye defense. What did you make of that game?
Well, you know, Iowa has just been one of the most impressive defenses in the country right now, and you've seen that. I mean, this is a team that's got 6 interceptions through the first 2 games.
Yeah.
You know, they're a very explosive team, you know, defensively. They're able to get those turnovers and takeaways and turn those into points. That's the most important thing. And when you can do that, you know, that makes you an effective team. I think at least before Ohio State lost, I felt like Iowa was the team that could be the biggest challenger, you know, to Ohio State. And I think they've got a chance to be, I still think they're right there. I think they've got the defense to do it. You know, I don't think a lot of people were looking at Iowa and thinking they were going to be, you know, any sort of challenger this year, but they're right there as well. They got Penn State on October 9th. They got Wisconsin on October 30th. So they've got chances to kind of make a big statement. They could be, you know, going into that Penn State game, you know, they could easily be 5-0 and they could be right there as well. So it's going to be interesting if Kirk Ferentz can keep this team focused through that stretch of the games.
Let's go to Florida. They beat South Florida in Tampa, but there seems to be this conversation between Anthony Richards and Emory Jones. Jones didn't have a good game, kind of even didn't look that great in their opener. What do you make of a quarterback situation for Dan Mullen?
Well, I think it's a big quarterback situation. I know Dan Mullen's trying to tell everyone, no, it's not. We've got 2 talented quarterbacks. Everything's fine. You know, but Anthony Richardson is clearly the more talented quarterback. He's clearly the most explosive quarterback. And at some point as a coach, you've got to decide who's the best quarterback that's going to help us win games. And who can be the quarterback that really can lead this team to a possibly SEC championship game. Anthony Richardson is that guy. Nothing to take away from Emory Jones. I think Emory Jones is a talented quarterback. But he makes too many mistakes. He made a couple mistakes in the USF game, even though it didn't cost them. So you're going into a big week with Alabama. I know Dan, like a lot of coaches, wants to kind of keep Alabama on their heels by, you know, saying we've got 2 guys who are going to play. But to me, long term, I think Richardson's the guy who's going to be the quarterback. And I think a lot of coaches now, you know, are because of the transfer portal, are really having to play this delicate game with their quarterback situation. They don't want to commit to one person too soon, because they're afraid the other quarterback's going to jump in the portal. So that might be a little bit of what Dan's trying to do. Plus, I think he realizes Emory spent a lot of time as the backup for the last couple of years. It's maybe his time to get an opportunity, and he wants to give him a fair shot.
Arkansas, with their win against Texas, they had touched all their touchdowns were on the ground. I wondered about this game going in, because I know, like, you could teach kids about the old rivalries and whatnot, but it only goes so far. But Arkansas looked absolutely ready to play this football game.
Oh, for sure. I think that's a testament to Sam Pittman, their coach. I mean, this is a guy who's come in, and, you know, when he got hired, I don't think a lot of people thought, wow, you know, why would they hire this? You know, why would they hire Pittman? You know, what does he bring to this program? Well, you're seeing that over the last couple of years. I mean, this is a tough-minded program, a program that's done an amazing job. They're up for every game, you know, that doesn't look like a team that you see get blown out in games because they're not prepared. You know, and you saw a little bit of that last year. You know, they got that big win against Mississippi State early in the season. You know, they were able to beat Ole Miss. They were able to beat Tennessee. Now you look at this win against, you know, Texas. This is huge for them. This is a big point for them. And I think they've done a great job of recruiting now. Now they can start to get some of these wins. They've got a tough road ahead of them. I mean, listen, they've got Texas A&M, Georgia, Ole Miss, and Auburn in four straight games. That's a difficult stretch for them. So if they can kind of use this win as a catalyst, I think they got an opportunity maybe to knock someone off there, surprise somebody maybe, and that's something exactly what Sam Pittman would like to see happen.
Absolutely. Matt, always good talking to you, my friend. We'll catch up with you down the road. Thank you so much, as always.
All right, sounds good. Thanks.
You got it. Matt Rochelle, Orlando Sentinel, talking some college football. Yeah, look, I was not real. It's one of those games where you should be shocked because Arkansas, they're growing. They're not, you know, they play it tough, but in the end, they just don't have the team. But they were really ready to go against Texas, and I was surprised with Texas. I mean, you get Texas when they went up against Louisiana to open up the season, and I know a lot of people look at the Sun Belt and they go, "What are they doing in the top 25?" And I know there's some detractors, but Billy Napier had a really good team, and with the Raging Cajuns are a good team. They're no joke. They were ranked 23rd because they are a good football team. And Texas beat them pretty easily. And if you're Steve Sarkisian and you win a game like that, it's against a ranked opponent, and you are now in the top 15 in the polls, whatever the polls mean to you, don't worry. It still means something. You go to Arkansas and you're going on the road, you know, I don't care what their record has been. I don't care what – that's an SEC school. That is an SEC school that recruits based on playing in the SEC. We better be ready to go. And Arkansas was ready to go. Texas didn't score a point in the first half. And again, Arkansas controlled the ground game, controlled the clock. It was a lot of things. I mean, a lot of things to like about Arkansas's upset. But he's right. Maybe Arkansas doesn't win much the rest of the way, but they got this. And if you get this, you can start building on it. Because in Fayetteville and in that state, Arkansas football is the thing. And if you are showing that there is starting to come back and rising up a bit, then you are really going to start recruiting well. All right, we'll come back. We'll talk more about some college football and some obviously in the NFL. But in college football, there's one particular game that could lead to a major change. And that's next on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
This hour, Wake Up Call, presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need a mortgage that fits your life? Rocket can. Thanks to Matt Rochelle joining us, talking some college football. USC, they lost to Stanford over the weekend, 42-28. The Trojans ranked 14th, were 17.5-point favorites. And they lost. Could cost Clay Helton his job. Haven't we heard this Clay Helton cost job thing before?
I'm surprised Clay Helton still has a job.
Do you think he's got something on the USC athletic directors?
He's
or
got
something?
To. Because he's got to.
You know, they were like, "Hey, Lane Kiffin, can we talk to you for a second? Bye."
Who was it? Was it? God, I almost want to say it was Peter Burns, SEC Network.
Yeah,
we've had him on a couple of times. I think he said that if Clay Helton was to get fired, there's only one logical choice, Lane Kiffin,
right?
Can you imagine? If they did that, they need to hire him on a tarmac.
I last week I said, I love Lane Kiffin. And the only reason I love him, it is nothing to do with his coaching ability. For whatever reason, Lane Kiffin is, you know who he reminds me of? Ferris Bueller. You know how everybody loved Ferris Bueller?
Yes.
Right? Ferris Bueller, Ferris Bueller would come in contact with somebody and they would instantly love him. But he was filled with shenanigans, deceit, you know, he was, you know, lying half the time. But people just loved him, right? Just loved him. Lane Kiffin, coach of the Raiders, coach of Tennessee, coach at USC, offensive coordinator at Alabama, goes to Florida Atlantic, goes down to Ole Miss. Tennessee people want him back. USC people probably take him back. there's something about Lane Kiffin that makes people go, I have to give this guy as much as he wants every time he sees him. See him. He's either Ferris Bueller or the guy selling you the monorail in The Simpsons, right? Monorail. Like, he's that kind of guy.
He is. No, Ferris Bueller is the... I mean, you could see people wearing T-shirts.
Right.
Saying, you know, save Lane Kiffin.
You know, the same thing about USC is the same thing people in Tennessee had when they... after Lane Kiffin left and Derek Dooley didn't work out and Butch Jones didn't work, they were like, why are we wasting our time? Get Lane Kiffin back here. And people were like, are you serious? And of course I'm serious. And they were like, yeah, let's do it. There was this movement to get Lane Kiffin back to Knoxville. Something about this guy is people are attracted to him.
He wins.
Yeah.
He's a good coach. I mean, might have some weird ethics sometimes or morals, but I don't know. I think you're right. I'm just picturing him. I mean, he could do the movie.
He could do the movie. Exactly. But you're right about Clay Helton. It's like there is a moment where you go, okay, this isn't really working out anymore. And by the way, we had Ed Orgeron, and I think he went 6-2 as an interim coach, and they said, bye.
Yeah.
You know, they were like, you get out of here too.
No, we want Clay.
We want Clay. And it's time for Clay Helton, who's probably on his way out soon. Who knows? Who knows how quickly USC pulls the trigger on that? It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio. On Twitter, @TonyDRadio, @RonCulver. That's Ron with two N's as we continue along after week 1 of the NFL.